On one hand, the number of planned layoffs dropped.
On the other hand, the number of private sector jobs dropped, too.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Wednesday, the last day of August. It's August 31st.
Coming up, British oil giant BP's been dealt another blow in Russia.
Could private funding save the PAGE program in Congress?
And later, a woman bought what she thought was an Apple iPad from a fast food parking lot. What could possibly go wrong?
I always buy Apple products in fast food parking
Absolutely.
Lots. All that and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
A new job report this morning paints a more hopeful picture for private sector workers. Consultants Challenger Gray and Christmas said employers announced slightly more than 51,000 planned layoffs in August, which is down 23% from last month. But it's still at a higher level than a year ago. John Challenger heads up the firm Challenger Gray and Christmas, and he's with us now from Chicago to talk about this morning's report. Morning, John.
Good morning.
Now, these numbers are down for the first time, as I mentioned, in 3 months. Is that a hint, at least, that the job market is turning around?
It's certainly positive news. Fears were up in the previous month because layoffs had jumped to a 16-month high. People were worried we might be moving into a period of much heavier layoffs, but they flattened out, even fallen, and that's good news.
We still see the government laying off more people in your report, certainly more than the private sector. Is that, do you think, going to continue, especially in these times of budget cuts?
Certainly seems to be the case. Government announced plans to cut 18,000 workers, nearly double what we saw in July. And unlike previous months, these announcements weren't dominated by state and local agencies. It was the federal level that led the way with heavy reductions among the civilian and officer ranks across three branches of the military. So more seem to be on the way.
Mm. All right. So how does this bode, John, for Friday's big Labor Department employment report? I mean, does it mean we see a big bump in job creation for the month?
Well, that's the key statistic. And what we've seen for now much of the last year is that companies are holding on to their people. There was just 33,000 layoffs in the private sector, but they're not hiring many people. Expectations are for about 100,000 coming up. That's just not enough to really propel the economy forward on a stronger growth path.
We've got about 15 seconds. Comparing where we are now, John, to where we've been, are we seeing enough improvement to really make a difference?
We're seeing slow growth. Companies aren't going out and hiring a lot of people, but they are responding to, you know, that GDP growing at 1%, that growth in demand. You know, until they get more access to credit and they really start to take risks, we're not going to see a big change from where we've been over the last year.
Just a slow go. All right, John Challenger joining us from Chicago. John, thanks.
Thank you.
There was another jobs report out this morning from the payroll company ADP. It said that private sector job growth slowed in August, with employers adding just 91,000 jobs. Richard DeKayser is an economist with the Parthenon Group who joins us now from Boston to talk about both of these jobs reports. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first, what do you make of these numbers from today?
Well, I think it's more of the same. You know, according to ADP, we've added about 100,000 jobs in each of the past 3 months. That is a little bit better than May, when we were about one-third that, depressed arguably to temporary factors, Japan's tsunami and high commodity prices. But the bottom line is the economy continues to muddle along, no double dip, but nothing really to celebrate.
Well, you mentioned temporary factors, which is something a lot of people have talked about when it comes to weak hiring. But I have to say, we're 3 years after Lehman Brothers, and we're still not doing much here.
Well, no, that's right. Sometimes economists refer to this whole process of recuperation that our economy is going through as deleveraging, and it's a long, slow process. The collapse of the housing market created a tremendous loss of wealth. People are struggling to scrimp together savings, pay off past debts. And the reality is that that's just a very gradual recuperative process, and it's going to take some time. And until it's played itself out, we're likely to see this kind of moderate pace of economic growth.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks as always.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, don't tell Silicon Valley there are no jobs. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports this morning many tech companies do have the jobs, but they can't find the right people to fill them.
High-tech companies have long complained the U.S. doesn't educate enough engineers with advanced degrees. But asking American CEOs if there are enough engineers in this country is a little like asking a child if the world has enough ice cream. Or so says Vivek Wadhwa.
At the macro level, there is absolutely no shortage of engineers in America.
Wadhwa is a visiting scholar at the University of California at Berkeley. Wadhwa says there are some engineer shortages, but they tend to be regional and confined to specific industries.
In Silicon Valley, there's extreme shortages of highly skilled programming talent. It's not a national problem, and it's not a generic engineering problem.
When it comes to engineering talent, Wadhwa believes what matters most is quality, not quantity. And today, more than half of all engineering PhDs awarded by American universities go to foreign students. And these days, many of them are heading home after graduation. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Well, you can check out the numbers anytime about jobs or anything else at our website, marketplace.org. And we've got a new show hosted by Marketplace's David Brancaccio. It's called The Marketplace Index,
yeah.
And that is up there at marketplace.org as well.
You can follow our show on Facebook and Twitter, too. Follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at Radio Chio.
And I'm at Jeremy Hobson.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting Carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
A new study shows dozens of major U.S. companies pay more in salaries to their CEOs than they pay in total corporate taxes. Well, that's at a time when some firms are clamoring for even lower corporate tax rates. Marketplace's Eve Troeh has that.
The Institute for Policy Studies is a liberal-leaning think tank that looked at the 100 most profitable companies in the U.S. It found 25 of them pay CEO salaries that total more than their tax bill. Study author Scott Klinger says the government invests in corporations through things like educating the workforce, maintaining highways.
And we think companies need to pay their fair share. They certainly have the money to pay their CEOs quite a bit.
The report targets big names like Boeing, Verizon, and Dow Chemical, and how much their CEOs make versus what they pay in taxes. Klinger says one big problem is that when companies make money overseas, they keep it there to avoid taxes. Right now, corporations are pushing for a repatriation holiday. Chris Molyneux represents biotech and pharmaceutical firms for Pennsylvania Bio. He says that's a grace period when companies can transfer money back into the U.S. without tax penalty.
What that allows us to do is to continue to put money into the research and development.
Drug companies might invest more overseas sales money into U.S. labs, for example. The last time the U.S. had such a holiday, though, companies mostly used the money to pay stockholders, not make jobs. I'm Eve Troeh for Marketplace.
Well, Steve, one of our colleagues, Steve Henn, who was in our podcast just a few moments ago, he had a job a while back that is being eliminated today.
Huh.
He was a page for the House of Representatives back in high school.
Wow.
And today, due to budget cuts and technological advances, apparently, the 200-year-old page program in the House is being canceled. Here's our Washington Bureau Chief, John Dimsdale.
In the age of Twitter and instant messaging, there's no longer need for high school pages to shuttle bills and documents around the Capitol. House leaders say it's time to save the $5 million annual cost. But lots of former pages, like legal scholar Jonathan Turley, say the program is worth the price.
It was a transformative experience. That's the only way to put it.
Turley says the money is not an obstacle, and House leaders know it.
Former pages include some of the most successful people in the country. We were prepared to take over the program, not just administering it. We said that we might be able to fund most, if not all, of the program.
A bipartisan group of representatives is also trying to save the program by cutting costs. Minnesota Democrat Betty McCollum thinks the number of pages could be reduced.
Programs change, and they should change, but we didn't get an opportunity to have a discussion about change. It was abruptly ended.
So far, the much smaller Senate page program will continue. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, Jeremy, volunteer firefighters in Pleasantville, Pennsylvania, are in the midst of their mail-in fundraising campaign. They do this once a year. But don't send in your donation with the enclosed pre-addressed envelope. Those envelopes have Pleasantville, New York printed on them. Do you know where Pleasantville is?
I don't know where Pleasantville is.
It's actually 375 miles away from Pleasantville, Pennsylvania. The fire chief says, forget about the envelope. Don't put it in the envelope. It's going to go somewhere we don't want it to go. Just bring your donation right to the fire station.
There you go. That could be the solution for all of the problems at the U.S. Postal Service. Just people can deliver stuff themselves. Now the marketplace, global perspective. In Moscow, Russia today, court officials raided BP's offices looking for information in a lawsuit where a shareholder claims his interests were harmed after Russia awarded a lucrative Arctic oil exploration deal to ExxonMobil instead of BP.
Mikhail Krutikin is a Russian energy analyst, and he's with the Moscow-based consultants Rus Energy. He's with us now from Moscow. Hi there.
Hello, yes, I am in Moscow right now.
Yes, yes, the raid on BP comes just as the British oil giant lost out to ExxonMobil on that Arctic deal. Is the timing significant here?
Well, I don't think so, because basically the raid was caused by the Russian partners of BP in its TNK BP company. They have some problems with the Anglo-American giant.
How important is that ExxonMobil deal that Russia gave?
It will be clear in about 2 years in the Black Sea when they drill the first well and see whether there are actually any reserves underground. And it will take about 5 years to understand whether reserves exist in Arctic waters of Rosneft. And before that, it's anyone's guess.
Rosneft, of course, is the Russian oil firm. How much oil is in the Russian Arctic territory, do you think?
Well, they believe that there is mostly gas, and it's about one-third of Russia's total reserves. But it's mainly a hypothetical, because in the many cases, there have not been any wells drilled in the area. And it's only speculative reserves, but not proved.
Do we see other joint ventures between Russian and Western firms coming down the pike, do you think?
Yes, I think it is possible, but you must understand that according to Russian laws, Rosneft cannot offer more than 33% in any joint venture on the continental shelf. And Gazprom can offer absolutely nothing because it is already 51% state-owned, and by Russian oil offshore projects should belong 51% to the state.
Mikhail Krutikin with Rus Energy joining us from Moscow. Thank you, sir.
You are welcome.
Well, shipping rates have dropped big time in the few years since demand for Chinese raw materials was booming. Back in 2008, the Chinese shipping giant Costco, and this is not the wholesale chain, Costco, it's COSCO, agreed to rent freighters for as much as $80,000 a day per ship, and they locked in that rate. But now the company says it's not going to pay the old rate because costs are so low. Sally Herships explains.
Imagine if you could renegotiate a contract years after you signed it. That's what China Ocean Shipping Company, or Costco, wants to do. Freighter owners locked in high prices when Costco was scrambling to fill orders from Chinese factories for coal and iron ore.
People had to go out and move cargo, so they went out and signed charter rates for whatever the market demanded.
Ted Prince is a transportation industry consultant. In 2008, there was a shortage of the type of ship that Costco needed. Now, with lower manufacturing demand, Costco only wants to pay today's going shipping rate, $16,000 a day per freighter.
If you were a ship owner, you'd be pretty concerned right now. You know, if they're not honoring their contracts, why should I be a chump and honor mine?
Ship owners are threatening to seize vessels owned by Costco as collateral. But is that legal? Martin Davis, director of Tulane's Maritime Law Center.
Yes, is the short answer to that. Although it seems a little outlandish to you that this can be done, it's sort of everyday practice in the shipping business.
But ship owners are hoping to work this out on land. Even on the high seas, no one wants to go to war with a customer. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Well, the cleanup continues from Hurricane Irene, and for many victims of the storm, now is the time to focus on the cost of their personal property damage. The problem is a lot of East Coast insurance policies don't cover floods, and that was what maybe damaged their homes. So how do you decide what to be insured against? For answers, let's bring in L.A. Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, David, you and I both live in L.A. We wouldn't expect something like a hurricane to come here, but who knows? Maybe it would. Should we be insured? Should we be prepared for something like that?
I guess it all depends on what it'll take to help you sleep at night, because that's really what insurance is all about. Obviously, planning for every possible contingency is nuts, unless you are Bill Gates and you can throw money at every problem you like. Otherwise, you want to play the odds. So if you live in L.A. like we do, earthquake insurance is something that should be high on your list if you're a homeowner. If you live on the East Coast, then you think about hurricane insurance.
So all those people that just experienced the earthquake last week on the East Coast, they were probably right not to have insurance for that.
Oh, absolutely. If you are playing the odds. Well, that was the first earthquake they felt in, what, 70 years?
Right.
Something like that. So who is going to buy earthquake insurance for something like that? Whereas out here, you'd be nuts if you have a home to at least not take a close look at that product.
So you're better off not having insurance and then just paying out of pocket if you suffer any damage from any disaster that happens.
I guess in those extreme cases that we're describing, the rule of thumb here, Jeremy, is the amount of equity that's in your home. And so that's when you want to start really planning for a disaster. So if you live in California and you have a lot of equity in your home, you need to protect that. Earthquake insurance suddenly becomes a very good idea. If you live on the East Coast, and again, you have a lot of equity in your home, then you want to think about things like flood insurance or hurricane insurance or locust insurance or whatever it is that's the problem out there. That's what you're trying to protect, though, is your investment.
And what about renters? We're hearing a lot more people are renters these days as the housing market has suffered. Should they be prepared when it comes to insurance?
I know a lot of people who are renters who swear by renters insurance. All I can tell you is while I was a renter, I never had it, and I did just fine. Now, it's not a very expensive product, roughly $15 a month for $30,000 in coverage or so. And it'll protect you for anything that your landlord's policy might not cover. So we're talking about natural disasters, possibly theft, things like that. Again, it all comes down to peace of mind. If this is going to help you sleep at night, then that's $15 well spent. Otherwise, well, that's $15 you could buy melatonin, you can buy a stiff shot of whiskey,
whatever
will work, you know?
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally, a note of caution when buying an iPad, Steve. As long as you are planning on buying that iPad in a McDonald's parking lot, always be careful about that.
That's where I do all my business.
A South Carolina woman was decided to go shopping for an iPad after picking up a Big Mac or something. She was in the parking lot. These two guys approached her, and they wanted $300 for this iPad. And she negotiated it down to $180.
Oh, wow.
So she really thought she was getting a
very
good deal. But when she drove home, she discovered that the tablet was actually just a piece of wood painted black with an Apple logo on it. They really had an eye for detail, though, these thieves. The fake screen included fake icons for email, photos, and the iPod application. I'm not sure if they had a fake Marketplace radio application on there, but who knows?
But at least they have some artistic, you know, abilities, right? They can make it, yeah.
Indeed, and if you want to see those, you can go to marketplace.org to check out the iPlank.
The iPlank, is that what it's, is that what we're calling it now? The iPlank.
There you go.
That's nice. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.